Thanks for joining us today for our Monday broadcast of Abiding in the Word with Dave Love, Senior Pastor of Calvary Castle Rock. Today we will be continuing our study in Exodus. So let's join Pastor Dave now.
Soon your trials will be over.
As we are going to be in Exodus chapter 21, we're going to get through all the way verse 27. That's right. Hang on. Whoa, buckle up. Buckle up. Yeah, the whole Blue Angel theme just kind of, we're taking off, baby. That's right. So this is really servitude versus slavery part two, you know, and I thought I might be able to finish it up today. There's going to be a part three. There is this understanding we need to have in the way of slavery in the New Testament, what was going on at that time. You know, Jesus shows up, and he never once talks about the biggest issue in the world at that time, slavery. Roman Empire. Two-thirds of the Roman Empire were slaves. It's the biggest issue in the world at that time. He never says a word about it. Why? We're going to talk about that next week. See, that's a little teaser. It's a little teaser to keep you coming back. We're going to talk about that. But here, for today, we've been going over chapter 21, and I want to give a quick little background of the heart of God when it comes to the poor, the down and out. We've been reading here in chapter 21 that it says, "Now these are the judgments which you shall set before them. If you buy a Hebrew servant, he shall serve 6 years, and in the seventh year he shall go out free and pay nothing. If he comes in by himself, he shall go out by himself. If he comes in married, then his wife shall go out with him." So why does someone sell himself or herself into servitude? It's because they're poor. Because they're in debt. And they need someone to take care of them. They need to learn from that person. So then 6 years later, guess what? They now go free. With the new information they have in order to be able to be good stewards over resources so they don't fall into debt again. And so this is God's remedy for those who are poor, those who fall into debt. And so there are many laws that were given within the Mosaic law to help the poor and the stranger, the one who is not a Hebrew, who is not an Israelite. In Leviticus 19:9, it says, "When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field, nor shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest. And you shall not glean your vineyard, nor shall you gather every grape of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and the stranger. I am the Lord your God." It also mentions that in Leviticus 23. Deuteronomy 24:20, "When you beat your olive trees, you shall not go over the boughs again. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, the widow." Deuteronomy 24:21, "When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, you shall not glean it afterwards. It shall be for the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow." In other words, when it came to the poor and the stranger in the land, you're given opportunities that when you're harvesting your field, you don't go all the way to the corner. You just kind of round it out, leave that corner there, round it out, leave that corner there. And every plot that you have, you just kind of round it out. And as you do that, those corners were for the poor and the stranger to be able to glean in order to be able to eat and provide for themselves. Fruit trees were the same way. You go through and you shake them and you pick as much as you can, but whatever you leave behind, you can't now go back and pick again. You have to leave it behind for the poor, for the stranger in the land. In Deuteronomy 15:7, it says, "If there is among you a poor man of your brethren within any of your gates of your land, which the Lord your God has given you, you shall not harden your heart, nor shut your hand from your poor brother, but you shall open your hand wide to him and willingly lend him sufficient for his need, whatever he needs." And so, again, they were to be very, very generous with those who were down and out. And if they lent to them, they were not to charge interest. Exodus 22:25, "If you lend money to any of my people who are poor among you. You shall not be like the moneylender to him. You shall not charge him interest. It also says that in Leviticus 25, 36 through 37. If the poor could not afford animals for sacrifice, and we'll soon get into how there are three feasts that they needed to go to every year. And if they did not have enough money for those animal sacrifices, they could use animals of lesser value. Leviticus 5, 7, if he's not able to bring a lamb, then he shall bring the Lord for his trespass, which he has committed, two turtle doves or two young pigeons, one as a sin offering and the other as a burnt offering. Verse 11 says, for if he is not able to bring two turtle doves, if he can't even do that, or two young pigeons, then he who sins shall bring for his offering one-tenth of an ephah flour, fine flour, as a sin offering. He shall put no oil on it, nor shall he put frankincense on it, for it is a sin offering. So even the extreme poor, if they can't afford the right sacrificial, there's things that they can do. They can bring an animal of lesser value, or they can pay here when it comes to a fine flour as a sin offering. And so, again, you could see that God understands and knows that there's always going to be the poor among us. We're told that in Deuteronomy. Jesus would quote Deuteronomy and say, hey, the poor you will have with you always. And that isn't because God makes them poor. It's because mankind is sinful. And guess what? We get into trouble, we make bad decisions, and sometimes we get into debt. And God knows that. And God knows that. And so here in Exodus 21, if that is the case and you make a bad decision and you're not really good over your resources and you've had a couple of bad years when it comes to crops and things like that, guess what? There's something you can do, and it's known as being an indentured servant. That's what we're going over in Exodus 21, 1 through 11. This is what this is all about. It's not the same as the slavery, as we went over last week, of the Atlantic slave trade. It's nothing like that. It's nothing like that. And the Bible makes it very clear. Exodus 21, 16. He who kidnaps a man and sells him, or if he is found in his hand, shall surely be put to death. That's man stealing. That is exactly what happened with the Atlantic slave trade. Okay? They were stealing people. God's word says that is wrong, and that has always been wrong. And so the servitude, the slavery that we're talking about here, completely different. Completely different. It's to get you back on your feet. It's temporary. 6 years, seventh year, you go free. That is what is being spoken of here. Now, in verse 1, again, it says, now these are the judgments which you shall set before them. If you buy a Hebrew servant, he shall serve 6 years. In the seventh, he shall go out free and pay nothing. Well, Deuteronomy gives a little bit more information here. In Deuteronomy 15, 12, it says, if your brother, a Hebrew man or a Hebrew woman, man or woman could do this, is sold to you and serves you 6 years, then in the seventh year you shall let him go free from you. And when you send him away free from you, here's what it expands on. It says, you shall not let him go away empty-handed. You shall supply him liberally from your flock, from your threshing floor, from your wine press, from what the Lord has blessed you with, you shall give to him. And here's the reason. You need to remember something here. You were once a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you. Therefore, I command you this thing today. So they come work for you for 6 years. Seventh year, they go free, but you don't let them go free empty-handed. It's great. They've learned all sorts of things while kind of on-the-job training there for 6 years, how to be a better steward and all that kind of stuff over resources, how to be able to handle flocks and herds and all that kind of stuff, how to grow things. That's awesome. But now they have that knowledge. How do they get started? They're going to need money to be able to buy some lambs and some goats. They're going to need money to buy some grain in order to plant for the crops. They're going to need money for all these kind of things. So what do? They don't go out empty-handed. Here's some flock. Here's part of the flock right here. Here's a few goats and sheep. Start your own flock. Guess what? Here's some grain. Go plant your own wheat, you know? And so you give them what they need as well in order to start this new life. And so this servitude is kind of an on-the-jobs program, if you will, and being released in that seventh year, they don't want to fall back in the same patterns. You give them everything that they need in order to go on with their life with all the knowledge that they now have. And hopefully, they don't fall into poverty again. And if they do, well, they can sell themselves again for another 6 years. Verse 3 says, if he comes in by himself, he shall go out by himself. If he comes in married, then his wife shall go out with him. Seems to be right. You kind of stumble over the next verse, though. If his master has given him a wife, and she has borne him sons or daughters, the wife and her children shall be her master's, and he shall go out by himself. Sounds fair to me. Let's move on.
Okay.
So there's one of three options here. Remember, we just read in Deuteronomy that not only the male can sell himself into servitude, but a female can as well, okay? The thought behind this is that, okay, he sells himself. He starts working for this family, okay, his master. Maybe 1 or 2 years goes by, okay? And all of a sudden, a female sells herself to this master. The master now has this female servant, has him as a male servant, probably has other male and female servants as well, okay? And he's the one that kind of introduces him to her. Okay. Then what happens? He marries her. All right. Well, he has maybe 3 years left of servitude. All right. She maybe has 5 or 6 years left of servitude. They have a couple of kids in the meanwhile. His servitude ends. His wife still owes 2 or 3 years of servitude. Plus, they have a couple of kids. One of three things could happen here. He could leave, wait until her 2 or 3 years of servitude is up, and then have his family back again. He can go work for 2 or 3 years while she's in servitude, save enough money, maybe in the first year have enough money to redeem her. Or he could look at the fact of how well he has it with his master. Look at this. Not only is he blessing me, taking care of me, he's the one that also introduced me to my wife. And I love him so much because I've seen how much he has cared for me. I have prospered under his hand. Why would I leave when things are going so well? And the third option is that he could become a bondservant. And that is what verse 5 and 6 is all about. But if the servant plainly says, I love my master, why would he love his master? Because his master has treated him very, very well. That's why. I love my master. I love my wife and my children. I'm not going to go out free. He is thinking that he will be better off. His family will be better off if he stays with his master. If he goes free, he's free to do whatever he wants to do. And in his thinking, he's thinking, being free to whatever I want to do isn't going to be as good as being free to serve my master. And so he stays. Then his master shall bring him to the judges. He shall also bring him to the door or the doorpost. And his master shall pierce his ear with an awl, and he shall serve him forever. Now, again, Deuteronomy expands on this a little bit. In verse 16 of Deuteronomy 15, it says, if it happens, he says to you, I will not go away from you because he loves you and your house. And look at this, since he prospers with you. There's also another thought here that not only do I love my master, that I believe he can take care of myself better than I could take care of myself, but that I prosper under him in a way that I don't think I'm going to be able to prosper on my own. It is just way better with my master. Do you see a message here? And so you shall take an awl, thrust it through his ear to the door. He shall be your servant forever, and also to your female servant you shall do likewise. Female servant can do the same thing. We are going to get back to this in a moment because the message here is just so glorious in many different ways. So let's move on to verse 7. And if a man sells his daughter to be a female slave, she shall not go out as the male slaves do. If she does not please her master, who has betrothed her to himself, then he shall let her be redeemed. He shall have no right to sell her to a foreign people, since he has dealt deceitfully with her. And if he has betrothed her to his son, he shall deal with her according to the custom of daughters. If he takes another wife, he shall not diminish her food, her clothing, and her marriage rights. And if he does not do these three for her, then she shall go out free without paying money. So, maidservant is bought, but not really to be a servant. She is being bought to be the master's wife, or his son's wife one day. Then he shall let her be redeemed. If her master did not marry her or decided not to give her to his son, the master is still obligated to respect her rights under the law. And what's under the law is that, hey, look, if you bought her for this reason and then you don't use her for this reason, then the family can redeem her back. Okay, the family can redeem her back. Now, first off, when we look at this, it kind of seems unfair. Why would a father even sell his daughter to be a wife of another household? Well, he would do this for one reason. He would do this because he's probably poor and he wants her to have a better life. He is hoping she will marry up. We all know what that means. Looking around here, I would suggest that most of the men here have married up. So, but used to, what this used to mean was that you married up in the way of social status. You went from poverty to being rich, okay? And so his hope is that his daughter would marry up. And so she would now, for the rest of her life, be well taken care of and respected in society, okay? And so this is what he is doing here. This is what this man is doing. Now, when we look at this, it says in verse 8, if she does not please her master who has betrothed her to himself, then he shall let her be redeemed. Okay, so again, if this poor family gets, I don't know, let's say it's 30 shekels of silver or whatever. The reason why he's doing that, he is looking after his daughter, but he's also poor. Okay, the family's poor. Well, what do you think they're going to do with that money? Maybe they do have some debt that they need to pay off. They're going to pay off that debt. Or they're going to invest it into their farm, their land, or something so they can prosper a little bit better. So they're doing this. Well, if she's brought in, it's usually not within the first couple of days, oh yeah, I don't want her. It's probably a semblance of time has gone by, whether that's months or maybe a whole year. Well, that family probably has already spent that money. Can't redeem her. They're brokenhearted that she's not going to be married into this family. How is she going to be treated? Well, we're told here, well, verse 9 first, it says, if he has betrothed her or son, he shall deal with her according to the custom of daughters. So the hope is, okay, if he's not going to marry, the son will, and she's still going to be taken care of like he's one of his daughters, okay? But verse 10 says, if he takes another wife, so he doesn't become the son's wife either, doesn't become his wife, he wants to take another wife, they can't redeem her, he's going to take another wife. Well, guess what? She, you're still going to have to take care of like she is your wife. And it says, he takes another wife, he shall not diminish her food, clothing, or marriage rights. So now he's going to be burdened with two wives, okay? He can do that. But if he doesn't want to do that, verse 11, if he does not do these three things, takes her as a wife, son doesn't keep her as a wife, doesn't keep her then as a second wife, guess what? Then she shall go free without paying money. She can go back to her home. She can go back to her home. And so again, God has all these things in place so that she will be treated fairly. If anything, if she isn't going to become his wife and she doesn't want to be known as the second wife or whatever, guess what? She can go back home. she can go back home. But the whole point of first selling her to begin with is so she would be up in status, that she would marry up, okay, and be respected and things like that. So now the rest of chapter 21, we're not done talking about servitude. We're not done talking about slavery, okay? But as you go through the rest of chapter 21, a lot of times you go, it talks about this, then this, then this, and this. It just seems very convoluted. It's not convoluted. What happens in the rest of chapter 21, 12 through 36, is now they're going to move on to capital crimes, then they're going to move on to personal injury, and then also criminal negligence. And capital crimes happen to free people, and capital crimes happen to servants or slaves. Guess what? Same judgments for both. Same judgments for both. And then when it comes to personal injury, same, those things happen to free people as well as those who are in servitude. Guess what? Judgments are equal for both. And then there's criminal negligence. Guess what? We're going to find out equal judgment for both. So here, I want to, but before we go any further, I want to talk about the judges, okay? The judges that are brought up in Deuteronomy 16, 18. Says, you shall appoint judges and officers in all your gates, which the Lord your God gives you according to your tribes, and they shall judge the people with just judgment. You shall not pervert justice. You shall not show partiality, nor take a bribe, for a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and twists the words of the righteous. You're not to show partiality. We're going to find out this is for the stranger as well as for the Israelite. You're not to show partiality. Oh, there's an issue between the stranger and a Hebrew. Well, obviously, I'm going to go by way of the Hebrew because I'm Hebrew. No, you're not. You're going to be a just judge, and you're going to show no partiality at all. You're not to pervert justice. In Deuteronomy 24:17, it says, you shall not pervert justice do the stranger or the fatherless, nor take a widow's garment as a pledge. Don't take advantage of people. Chapter 25, verse 1 of Deuteronomy, if there's a dispute between men and they come to court and the judges may judge them, they justify the righteous and condemn the wicked. That's what they're supposed to do. They're to judge righteously. Any dispute between a Jew or a stranger, you go to court in order to get justice from the judges. No partiality. Judge righteously. Just judgment. You don't want to oppress the servant or the slave. In Deuteronomy 24:14, you shall not oppress a hired servant who is poor and needy, whether one of your brethren or one of the aliens who is in your land within your gates. So a servant can be a Hebrew, a servant, can be a stranger or an alien. And guess what? Don't oppress either one. Well, I know I'm not supposed to oppress my brethren, but this guy's a stranger. He's not one of us. Still can't oppress them. The word oppress in the Hebrew, ashak, and it means to exploit, to act wrongly towards, to treat unjustly, or be violent towards. Okay? This is the heart of God. Do not oppress a hired servant. Either a Jew or a stranger or alien, which means you did not exploit them, act wrongly towards them, or be violent towards them. This is the heart of God towards servants. Let nothing
ever separate us. Well, that wraps up this Monday edition of Abiding in the Word with Pastor Dave Love. Be sure to join us tomorrow as we dive deeper into our study in the book of Exodus. If you're in Castle Rock or the surrounding area, we'd love to have you visit. You'll find us right near the actual Castle Rock on the corner of 5th and Woodlands. Our weekend services are Saturdays at 5 p.m. and Sundays at a new time of 8:30 a.m. as well as 11 a.m. High schoolers will meet during the 8:30 service and junior high students during the 11 a.m. service. Childcare is available during all our weekend services. We also have a midweek study on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. At the same time, our kids ministry runs Awana. And for young adults, our Arise Ministry meets every Friday night at 6:30, right here at the church. For more information about us or this radio ministry, please visit our website at calvarycr.com or download our free mobile app from the Apple App Store or Google Play. You can also call the church office at 303-663-2514. We appreciate you spending time with us today. Until our next time together, we encourage you to always be abiding in the Word of God.